You are listening to Making Bank, where we uncover the mindset and success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business.
Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the mindset and the success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business today. I'm really honored and super excited for today's guest. He is the Chief Technology Officer of Blitz Metrics. They're a digital marketing company which partners with schools to train young adults. Dennis Yu's program centers around mentorship, helping students grow their expertise to manage social campaigns for enterprise clients like the Golden State Warriors, who are right now in the NBA Finals with my Cleveland Cavaliers, Nike, and Rosetta Stone. He's an internationally recognized lecturer in Facebook marketing and has spoken in over 17 countries. He has also been featured on the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, LA Times, NPR, TechCrunch, Fox News, CBS Evening News, and has also co-authored Facebook Nation, a textbook taught to over 700 colleges and universities. Dennis has also held leadership positions at Yahoo, American Airlines, and I thought this was something pretty cool, has completed in over 20 marathons, including a 70-mile ultra marathon.
Besides How's that being for torture?
What's that?
How's that for torture?
I know. Well, trust me, because I mean, I've done tons of half marathons, some marathons, but not an ultra marathon. So that was what I thought was so cool about that. And besides being a Facebook data and ad geek, you can find him eating chicken wings and playing a very fun game of ultimate frisbee in a city near you. Dennis, I want to welcome you today to Making Bank.
Pleasure, Josh.
Awesome.
Welcome, fellow runner.
Yeah. It was crazy. I've run for years and years and years and used to put like 60, 80 miles a week training. And finally, then I found CrossFit back in like 2003 and kind of combined that in. So I was able to cut mileage down but still run. It, you know, just as good or better. So it's cool, but I has always loved running. So, well, excited to have you on today. I mean, we met at Billie Jean's event and, you know, got to briefly talk to everybody. It kept swarming over, so I didn't monopolize a ton of your time. And but it's really exciting today to be able to learn about what's kind of got you started, what's taken you down the path to entrepreneurship, and just kind of from a mindset and success standpoint, what you apply every day in your life that's gotten you to where you are today. So maybe let's just start off a little bit about what, you know, your background and how you kind of got started in all this.
So Josh, I'm a runner like you, and I ran cross country. I ran Division I cross country too. I've run 20 something marathons, and I've learned that if you can outsuffer the other guy, like if you're running a 5K in high school and it's the last 100 meters and it's you and that other guy, or it's like me and the other guy, I'm going to win, right? I don't care how much you talk. I don't care how much you've trained. I don't care what school you're from. Because when it's down to you and me in the last 100 meters, whoever can out-muscle it is the one that's going to win. And that's what I love about entrepreneurship. I learned that in high school and in college. I didn't speak English until I was six. And I was made fun of. I was put in the special needs classes. And my teacher, her name was Mrs. Gore, she would come up. She'd hold my cheeks and say, "Oh, you're so cute and so retarded," you know. And have you ever been in a situation like that, right, where you were mocked and then there was nothing you could do about it? And then other people who mean well, if you don't speak English, what do? They talk louder at you. Somehow, like if you don't know the words, if they talk louder at you and if they somehow talk slow, like that's – I don't know what those words mean, okay? So like I'm not dumb, right? And maybe it's because I had a chip on my shoulder or whatever, but through cross country, I learned that – even if I couldn't speak very well, if I could beat you and win, it didn't matter what the ref had to say. It doesn't matter who's popular. And that – this is going to sound weird, but I'm an Asian, so I'm good at math. I would dominate in math and like standardized tests and things like that, and I would dominate in cross country because both of those, to me, felt like they were math, right? Those were things that were governed by a specific set of rules, and you could – use those rules like how your body processes energy, you know, glycogen reserves, ADP, ATP, or just like, You know, there's many different ways to solve a math problem, but you still have to get to that right answer. There's mechanics behind business. So one of the things that I would do when I was in high school was I would sell candies. Do you remember Now and Laters?
Oh, yeah.
So like these little, not like these, this is a Burt's Bees, but I would, this will show you like how I think. The school snack shack only sold, I think, Snickers and Milky Way. And they were something like 25 cents, which shows you like, you know, back in the day, things were cheaper. And I would go to the supermarket and find things that were on sale. And I would get like 15 or 20 different kinds of candies, put in my backpack and sell them like four for a dollar, five for a dollar. I'd sell them cheaper and I had greater variety. So the students, instead of going to the snack shack, they'd buy for me because I was cheaper and I had more variety. Further, they had these coupons. So if you were a parent and you gave your kid lunch money, that kid might go and just spend it on candy. But if they got this lunch coupon, they could turn that in for only a meal. So what I'd say is, if you give me your lunch coupon, I'll give you three candies, right? So I started to do arbitrage before I realized that. And some of these kids, I would let them have credit with me, like a line of credit, like up to maybe even like $5, right? Because I knew they got their allowance every week. And I carried that into boarding school. And I had a robust business where I took my mountain bike and I went to Choate Rosemary Hall in Wallingford, Connecticut, a rich boarding school. And I rode down to the bottom of the hill at the Stop and Shop and I would load up. I had a red wagon, right? A radio flyer wagon that I rigged up to hook up to the back of my seat. And I would buy like $100, $150 of groceries or sodas or things like that. And I would bike back up the hill and I would sell that stuff out of my dorm room. And that's what taught me e-commerce and entrepreneurship, because these rich kids would get their allowance every month, right? These were kids of billionaires or, you know, princes, like really, really rich kids went to this school. Like Ben Walton, who was the grandson of Sam Walton. I got to hang out with all these kinds of kids. And it taught me entrepreneurship at a really close level, because not only was I hanging out with these kids, but I would go to their houses, right? We would fly to some exotic place over the weekend and, you know, daddy's a billionaire. So we'd be able to, I learned so much about business that way. And that taught me mentorship. So imagine like my buddy, Bill Harnish, he's a multi-billionaire, largest divorce settlement in the history of New York. He's the guy who funded Costco and put the money in the Best Buy, multi-billionaire, hedge fund owner, right? And he's teaching me how he buys and sells companies. He's teaching me. I remember one time we were in, I want to say it was Park City, and we stopped at the Costco because we were going to one of the resorts that he owned. And we stopped at a Costco to buy those giant muffin things. Have you seen those? It was like six giant muffins from Costco.
Right.
That's just like things you buy from Costco. And we were coming back to the rental car and I noticed there was a Nike outlet store right next to that. And I said, oh man, I'd love to get some new running shoes. And he said, yeah, go ahead. I'm like, oh, no, I don't want to make you wait because it'd only be like saving 10 bucks, but, you know, because I saw the outlet store was there. But I made that guy wait in the car for 35 minutes, right, while I was there trying to save $10, right, to get a pair of running shoes. So, but I learned so much. And if it wasn't for those kinds of opportunities, like I was mentored by Al Casey, who was the CEO of American Airlines, when I went to SMU, right, for undergrad. And I learned about how an airline worked. And I got a job at American Airlines helping build the website and doing all the technology deals. I couldn't even get an interview at that company. I wanted to work at Nike. I submitted all my stuff. I had all my times. I had my good grades. I had all that kind of stuff. I couldn't even get an interview at that company. But to be able to then, almost 20 years later, get Nike as a client for Facebook ads and Facebook analytics, right? They've since brought that in-house. That just shows you that if it wasn't for those kinds of connections, like the big lesson for me, Josh, was it was the connections of the mentorship that meant everything. And I had previously thought it was all about how hard could I work? How hard could I run? What do I need to do? Because as a good Chinese student, I'm going to outstudy you. And thus asking other people for help is awkward. It's cheating. And I've learned in the world of business, cheating is the way to work. You know, mentorship, connections, other people who know things that you don't know, and you know things they don't know, and you collaborate. It's really that easy. I see most entrepreneurs are struggling where they're by themselves as some kind of like hero. Like they think they're LeBron James and they're going to carry the Cavaliers, and you're just going to lose.
Are you digging in there?
You're going to have 51 points and a triple double.
I know.
Sorry.
No, that's awesome. I mean, you definitely brought up some, you know, great points. Is, you know, I think mentorship is huge. You gotta have that mentorship, and you being able to get that at such a young age is amazing. Because, you know, I know, like for me at 14 is one of the original businesses I first started selling computers and everything. And, you know, for my mentorship, it was reading Tony Robbins and trying to learn, you know, from him and his books to teach myself and everything. But, you know, being able to connect and have that mentorship to shortcut, you know, to move yourself ahead and to learn what those strategies are and different things that you're going to be able to utilize later in life is super awesome. So mentorship, what would you say one of your other big learning ahas that came from that time frame?
Things take a lot longer than you think. I remember when we first built the American Airlines website and launched it in 1997, we spent $3 million lining up advertising, Wall Street Journal, USA Today, like, you know, front page ads saying, hey, the launch of AA.com, come and book tickets and this kind of thing, right? A whole new experience. And the day it launched, the website wasn't ready. And all that media that we'd lined up was thrown away. And all these people were trying to hit the website. It was a disaster. And guess whose fault it was, right? Now, of course, it was my fault. But then I could blame the other people that I'd hired to integrate the website and make sure the shopping carts were. I mean, 20 years ago, selling airline tickets on the internet was like a really big deal. All the systems you had, like, you didn't have PHP and MySQL and all these kinds of things. You didn't have, you know, package software or, you know, a Shopify. Like, you didn't have anything like that, right? There was heavy connections between different databases and our booking system, right? And I could have blamed them, but it was my fault because I thought, man, you know, we've got 6 months until the launch. It should be easy to do. I've mapped this thing out. I put in a 20% contingency in terms of how much time it would take. And I got called up to the big boss's office after this gigantic failure. And the PR people tried to save me by saying, oh, well, we had so much traffic, we couldn't even handle it, brought the servers down. I'm like, no, it's because it didn't work.
It wasn't there.
Yeah. And I thought, man, you're going to fire me, aren't you? He's like, nope, son. We just made a multi-million dollar investment in you, and we expect to turn that around and make it profitable. And time again, I have been impatient, and it's taken me 20 years to get to this point. And it's not because I'm slow. It's because, you know, as an entrepreneur, you hear all these other stories. Like, entrepreneurs love to hang out with other entrepreneurs and tell lies to each other about how successful they are.
When really, you see it all the time on Facebook.
Payroll.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's all kinds of problems, right? Things take longer than you think. And, you know, things like Dunning-Kruger take effect. And there's other things like, in the short run, you overestimate what's possible. And in the long run, you underestimate what's possible, like Tony Robbins likes to say. And I've looked at every opportunity. Like, you should do this too. Think about every business opportunity where you felt a sense of urgency. Like, you had to act right away. The window's going to close. Like, there are going to be these other competitors. So you better hurry up and, like, get your thing out first. And see, did you really need to get it out that soon, right? I thought 20 years ago that the market for local advertising, that's like people in the yellow pages, restaurants, plumbers, attorneys, veterinarians, nail, you know, salons, massage therapists, like all the different kinds of like local, like thousands of businesses, but only differing by city, right? There's like the same one of these in every city. I thought back in like 95, this is over 20 years ago, that all these guys were going to jump on the internet, build their websites, start doing e-commerce, get their email systems, like all these digital things, social media. I thought they'd get all that stuff going. And we're in 2018, and the majority of Main Street media, they don't really have any of that stuff. And when I was at Yahoo, I thought, man, we better like hurry up and do Yahoo Local because we're competing against Google and all these other folks. And it turns out that technology can move very quickly. So we don't want to mistake those cycles of how fast tech works. Well, that's like Google's fundamental mistake. They think everyone is sophisticated and, you know, PhD in engineering from Carnegie Mellon. And people change a lot slower. And so like, oh, self-driving cars, are people going to, you know, they're going to drive their car down the street and the QR code's going to pop up with them and make a recommendation on what they should eat for dinner as they're going by. Like, I've heard that lie for 20 years. It still doesn't exist. And if you're an entrepreneur and you realize you actually have more time, that it's better to do it right than it is to try to do it fast. I've learned that mistake so many times over where I've rushed to get a crap because people are like, yeah, just launch and fail fast. And I, yeah, that's painful. That's expensive. When you fail enough times, you get discouraged. This week, we lost two people on our team, right? We lost two good people because they just couldn't deal with their failing on projects because they wanted to get rich with it. Like one of them wanted to be our CEO, having no digital marketing experience, wants to be our CEO within 6 months. And, you know, another one wants to run the company with only 2 months of experience. Like that's not never managed a team before. We have a few hundred people to manage a software development team, to manage big enterprise relationships, to manage the publishing of content that we produce across different places, to negotiate deals. I mean, there's a lot of complex stuff that we're doing, right? And there's no way a young adult is going to be able to manage things like that. Now, I think back to me as when I was like 19 or 20, and I thought I was invincible and I could conquer the world. And maybe it's the old guy me talking now, where it's like back in my day, we used to, you know, covered wagons. But, you know, even Gary Vaynerchuk will say stuff about, you know, having more patience. I think that's really key because it'll reduce the number of mistakes you make. This whole like hustling and, oh, I only slept 3 hours last night. I can be pretty sure you're making lots of mistakes today because you only slept 3 hours last night.
Right. I mean, sometimes it happens, but it's not a daily thing, you know.
I drink coconut water. LeBron James drinks coconut water. I do too.
Maybe that'll help us tonight.
Right. Hydration.
No, that's, you know, that's, I mean, definitely a key thing is, you know, patience. And, you know, I mean, with, like you said, the way technology moves fast, the changes, I mean, you know, the whole thing about, you know, Safari rolling out the whole new pop-up cookie thingy today, you know, and stuff like that I saw. It's, you know, it's, so everybody's like, oh no, Facebook's dead, you know, pixels are dead, but, you know,
every year we hear that.
Right. Sky's right. Falling.
They're all chicken littles.
So, you know, it's just, it's okay. You know, how can I adjust? You know, where do I need to move my, you know, how can I position certain things in my business? You know, so we're always, you know, staying ahead. So we're always, you know, we don't have to worry about that and make those changes. So no, that, I think those are some, you know, definitely amazing insights, along the way. So, what got you from that point, you know, you're at American Airlines, to now owning your own digital media company and then obtaining, you know, like clients like Golden State and Nike and that?
I'm going to tell you something that is kind of a secret, but I don't think anyone does. And it's super obvious. And I'll show you, I'll give you a couple examples and then I'll tell you how to apply this at scale so everyone can apply this. So when I was back at American Airlines over 20 years ago, all of us vice presidents that wanted to spend money, we had to get a purchase order signed through this whole process. And there are these different people you had to go through. And the person I had to go through, her name was Miriam. And she processed all the technology, all the contracts that I wanted to push through, you know, whether it's $10 or $1 million, I had to run through her. And what I would do is, because I was so busy going from meeting to meeting, and these buildings were far apart, I actually had rollerblades. And I would go between these different offices. It's like, there's Dennis. He's going on his rollerblades. Like, oh, I'm trying to save money. I'm to save time. I'm trying to be as efficient as possible, because that was the mindset I had back then, right? Like, just try to do it faster. I'm a cross-country runner. I want to shave minutes off. I want to get, you know, I won't wear socks when I'm wearing running shoes when I'm racing, because it cuts an ounce off, and that's important. You know, like, I was just always trying to optimize, you know, like weight weenies on the bike, you know, full carbon. But I remember one time I was rushing into Miriam's office and I dropped off my latest purchase order and I said, I need this right away because we have this deal. We need to get this. Can you push this through? Right. And she had a stack of all these purchase orders. And I'm sure she just like rolled her eyes. It's like,
here's another,
whatever, like yeah. Get in line with all the other people. Right. Like, why should I give you any particular special treatment? Right. Who are you? You're like one of all these other people asking me for stuff. But one day I went into her office. And as I was about to put this thing onto her stack, like she had the, I know that you guys don't do this nowadays, it's 2018, but 20 years ago, you used to have like stacks of paper. You'd have like an inbox and an outbox. People would have these like wire metal baskets. So I was just about to put the purchase order request on her desk, but I didn't, because I noticed that it looked like she was hurt or crying or like something was wrong. So I did something I normally would never do, because I was late to another meeting, because I'm like, crap, I got to drop this thing off. Now I got to get all the way to the other side. And I said, Miriam, what's going on? And she told me that 30 minutes ago, her mom was diagnosed with cancer. And then I sat down next to her. I didn't even put the purchase order on there. And I just chatted with her for like 20 minutes or so. And it felt like an hour. I took my time. And she told me about how important her mom was to her. And she also, I remember for some reason, during our talk, she mentioned that Hershey's Kisses were her favorite candy, right? And I didn't try to like give advice. I was there just to listen, right? And I just let her talk. And then I left. Later that night, I rollerbladed to Walgreens and I bought a bag of Hershey's Kisses, rollerbladed back to the office and spelled out her name in Hershey's Kisses on her desk that night. Next morning, she comes rushing into my office, tears streaming down her face. Big hug, right? Because someone cared. And from then on, Josh, every one of my purchase orders got approved immediately. And other VPs were like, damn, Dennis, like, how are you getting your stuff through? Like, I don't know, man. Maybe just treat people right, right? So then I got the idea, wow, you know, this really works when you show that you care for people, because almost nobody says thank you. They're all so busy, they don't say thank you. Even people on our team don't even say thank you to me, right? The people that work for you, how often do they say thank you? How grateful are they? The most powerful thing that you can do in business is to have gratitude, is to say thank you. So I systematized it because I'm an engineer. So I would go to the Hallmark store and I would buy 30 or 40 thank you cards at a time. And, you know, if you go to the card aisle, you'll see like happy birthday and Mother's Day and like you got a new kid, but you'll see almost no thank you cards, which tells you something about society. Right. So I'd grab a stack of those and then I'd go to the supermarket and I'd buy a stack of like $10 gift cards for like Amazon or the movie theater or Chili's or stuff like that. And then every Friday afternoon, I would pull out, I would open the drawer and I'd pull out these thank you cards and I would start writing, thank you, Josh, so much for doing a great job on this particular project. Why don't you and your wife, you know, go to the movies on me? And so I would just sit there for an hour every Friday afternoon and do that. And the ROI I got on that, on anything, was so good, it's like I was manipulating people. Now, I didn't do it because I wanted to manipulate people, but I found that simple things like making a bobblehead when you go visit somebody, right? Or creating a speaker reel for them, or when they come to our workshop and we give them a Facebook shirt. These are like hard to get. These are, you know, really, you can only get Menlo Park. You can't order these things online, right? Just different ways of trying to say thank you. Or if someone's trying to learn, we've got kids that are learning how to produce 1 minute videos as social media experts certified in our program. So we give them these ring lights, right?
That's cool. Yeah.
And then we teach people how to say thank you at scale. So when you join our program, you have to make a series of 1 minute videos. And some of those are saying thank you to the people that matter in your life. And you learn how to tell stories. And when you learn how to tell stories about your life, you can then interview other businesses and help them tell their story better by asking them simple questions, by talking to their customers. And guess what? We put that on Facebook. We use Facebook's ad system in a certain way, which is not all that fancy, right? We call it the 1 minute video and the dollar a day principle. And we find that it drives sales, because what we're doing is we're harvesting the good things that other people have to say about your business, like Primal Organics. Like, we would take those customer reviews, edit them in the 1 minute videos. All that editing is done by VAs at $3 or $4 an hour, virtual assistants in the Philippines, right? All trained in our system, costs us almost nothing, put it out there. We boost them to lookalike audiences for a dollar a day and it drives sales. Now, what do you think is more powerful? Josh, you talking about organic skincare and, you know, different items, or different people of different walks in life allowing Facebook to figure out what content matches against what user. You know, the news feed on Facebook is an amazing machine learning feat where it's trying to figure out what content is going to be most interesting for you based on what you've engaged with. So if you set up your ads in the right way and you make that content interesting, and it's a bunch of not just testimonials, which is like a one side, don't say testimonial because that's obviously an advertisement, but you're telling stories of your customers, right? Now, how, if you let Facebook's machine, immensely powerful, do that work for you, then you're going to win, because that's what the system does. Facebook's system is always trying to figure out, of all the zillions of things that you could see, what's going to be most interesting. We feed it 1 minute interesting videos, not even talking about the product necessarily, right? Just telling their stories, helping people identify, giving tips on how do you take care of your skin, not talking about the product, just like general knowledge, sharing, you know, who you are. The Facebook's going to figure out who, let's say that, you know, I'm a 35-year-old stay-at-home mom, and you've got a few examples in your library of stay-at-home moms that are sharing their tips on how they're a better stay-at-home mom and how they're able to save money and how they're able to, like, Not even talking about skincare, right? Do you think Facebook can make that connection for you, can do that work for you, right? And so that's what we find is working. And for any entrepreneur out there, we've learned that when you say thank you at scale, when you do good things for other people, when your product is good and you actually systematize, this is the thing. Like people are like, oh, yeah, word of mouth, you know, this kind of thing. But if you actually systematize it, this is what we hire young adults to do. They learn to scour the internet. It could be like Google. We have different monitoring tools. We have different ways where they'll go out and like interview the customers and make 1 minute videos. Because look, anyone with one of these things here is a videographer, okay? And who do you think is going to do a better job in collecting 1 minute videos and putting them on social media? A 21-year-old who is motivated and not entitled or whatever and has gone through our training program, or a 50-year-old, you know, business owner, right? Who's going to do a better job?
Yeah, 21-year-old, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so you got tons and tons of kids that are running around with their phones, taking videos, loading up Facebook ads, following our system, right? And it's driving sales. And it's not because it's anything magic. It's not because of technology or anything that we built. It's because we're leveraging something that we know will always work years from now. And so now we're doing it at scale. So it's mentorship at scale. It's saying thank you at scale. It's, you know, it's like Al Casey, who was my mentor, right? He was the CEO of American Airlines. The things that he taught me, the doors that he opened for me, is why I started Blitz, so that we could do the same thing for other young adults. And I think back to like the young Dennis, how, you know, what would I do? Like, how do I repay that debt that I got? And I believe that any entrepreneur that is able to connect at that level and have that kind of mission focus, people will buy from you even if you have kind of like an okay product, because they believe in your mission. Like we're doing this with the military. So we've got a bunch of kids that have come out of the military. They served in the Army 3 years or 4 years. They're 22, 23. They need to get a job now. So we train them in digital marketing.
That's cool.
And then put them with veteran-owned businesses. And people that want to support America, they understand what it was like, because maybe they served 15 or 20 years ago. And they want to help these young adults that, you know, have since come out and needed skills, and they've come, those kids that have come through our training program. So it's a great thing. It's all about giving back. Just like Miriam, I told you with the Hershey's Kisses, the same. How do you say thank you? And how do you turn that, not as a charity, but turn it into an actual mission-driven for-profit business?
No, that's awesome. I mean, I think just in general, like you said, is we that that part of everything, what we do with, you know, gratitude and thanking, you know, I mean, like you said, how many times a day do you hear it? You don't anymore. And, you know, I know one of the companies I had years ago, we were in merchant services. We were one of the first companies to put electronic credit card terminals in businesses. And every time somebody would come on with our program and our company, we would send them, you know, a thank you card, and, you know, whatever, we kind of figured out what their favorite thing was or whatever it may have been. And, you know, and it's now with the way the internet and access to technology, everything, it's way easier than it was.
Yeah.
Or it should be way easier than it was.
And then you could do an amazing video greeting. You could put together a speaker reel. You could, here, look at this. So this is my business partner. And you see the one in the middle is Mark Zuckerberg, right? And you can see my business partner. Now, I love to elevate him, Logan, because he deserves it, right? Because 3 years ago, he was delivering for Pizza Hut at $9 an hour. And now he has Mark Zuckerberg coming up to him asking to take a picture. He didn't go up to Mark Zuckerberg. Mark Zuckerberg came up to him. 3 years ago, he didn't even know who Mark Zuckerberg was, right? So when you can uplift other people like that, how does that – I mean, the whole thing like, oh, if you take care of your employees, they'll take care of your customers. Yeah, that's true. But how do you do that at scale through mentorship and saying thank you? I don't even want to talk about myself. Like I grimace, Josh. Like you were reading my bio of like, oh, he did all these different things in his career. I'm like, oh, no. I don't want to hear that, right? I'd rather talk about other people and how awesome they are. And I found that to be my secret weapon. But doing that at scale, that's the key. Like people understand that conceptually, but you've got to have a process of other people that – like we use Fancy Hands, for example, right? So we pay $4 a task to call up people and say thank you, and like all these different ways of saying thank you. And you might find that people have said amazing things about you, or, you know, whatever, 4 or 5 years ago. And if you just had the time to rekindle those relationships, think about how much more powerful you'd be. And so that's what I get a ton of time back, because anything I can delegate out, like right now, we have a maid in the house and she's doing all this cleaning. She's fantastic. She like does the pool. She goes and goes to the grocery store and like buys things. She'll write greeting cards in my name, like all that kind of stuff. I'm constantly buying back time, right? Anything I can delegate out to, like the handwritten card. If you get a handwritten card from me, it actually wasn't written by me. You know, things like that, right?
Well, thanks for telling me. Surprise, but, yeah. It's like, oh, thanks, Dennis. Your handwritings look a little feminine these days.
Yeah. You know, whatever gender preference I have today.
No, that's awesome. I mean, it's definitely some, you know, really different insight. And, you know, I think even to what you said about, you know, hey, you know, I want to talk about other people and how what they're doing and, you know, how they're, you know, helping and, you know, what I've learned from them is really cool. Because, I mean, a lot of times, like you said, and it started all the way back, your mentorship, I mean, and that's, you know, learning from other people. And I know that's one of the biggest things for me that I've found over the years is just investing back into myself every year. I mean, you know, I spend a significant chunk of money, you know, every single year for mentorship and trying to learn and, you know, where, what areas do I need to improve in and who's the best in that area to go after and learn from. So, well, cool. Well, we got a few minutes left. Actually, I think we may have already went over, but that's all right. We have a few minutes left because I extended since we were grabbing some cool, awesome content. and you mentioned kind of one thing on, since you're like one of the super Facebook guys out there and you teach a lot and you train a lot, what are a couple of the Facebook tips you could share with our audience? I know you mentioned one about like the dollar a day and the 1 minute videos and stuff that people could kind of, that they could take and say, okay, cool, I can implement this right now and it's going to help move my brand, my business or whatever forward a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of funny because the way you can tell whether people are pros or not is how simply they can say complex things. And we've spent over $1 billion with a B on Facebook ads in the last 11 years. And we've come back to the simple rules of the fundamentals. You know, it's like the people that play golf that are pros, they putt all the time, right? So the equivalent of putting is collecting 1 minute videos. If you collect 1 minute videos and you put it into the structure that we call the 3x3. So a funnel that's top, middle, and bottom is really composed of why, how, and what. Your why is your story. It's who you are. It's, you know, when I was a child, I went to SeaWorld for the first time, and here's what I learned. Just about like who I am, right? Why I ran my first marathon, and I almost collapsed because I ran out of energy, whatever. And the how is your sharing expertise. How do you do stuff? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like, here's how we say thank you. How do we do the dollar a day? How do we build a website that ranks on Google? How do we, like, you have knowledge too, right? Think about what that how is. And then the what is what everyone understands. Here's some skincare products. Here's, you know, some coconut water. Here's the thing I'm trying to sell. Everyone understands the what, but they miss the why to the how, then to the what. So if you have three in each, you have a 3x3 grid. So you have nine of them. The reason you have three is you want to test. You want to test different stories. You want to give some variety for Facebook to kind of figure out which content should match against which audience combinations. Because we see 10% of videos will typically succeed. So that means 90% of your stuff's going to fail. So just like get over it and crank out 30 or 40 of these 1 minute videos where you're interviewing other people. You're saying thank you. You're capturing, you know, whatever. There's like all in different environments, not with the white wall in the background, right? Just you're out and about using your phone. You're making it like Blair Witch, you know, it's like a real user, right? And then you load that up in the Facebook. And then over time, your 3x3 will be your greatest hits, your very best three in each of these three. And then that's where you promote for a dollar a day against each of these. And we find that over time, that builds an evergreen funnel. Because most people, when they get to Facebook or Twitter or whatever, they just feel like they have to post like three times per day, like tweet three times per day, write like one blog post per week. And I think that's ridiculous. What you need to do is create your greatest hits. We saw, who was it? Guns N' Roses in concert, right?
Yeah.
A few months ago. MGM's a client of ours. So okay. We get to go for free, right? Any of the hotels and food, we eat and stay for free. And Appetite for Destruction came out in 1987. But they're still playing those songs. Those greatest hits are 30 years old. We see the same is true when you tell stories. like Beauty and the Beast or Cinderella, whatever, those stories are old, but they still produce revenue for Disney or Pixar, like whoever it is, right? And so the same should be true of your content. If you build that 3x3, you're going to spend more time. You're going to spend 80% of your time. This is something people don't get. You're going to spend 80% of your time tuning what's already working and only 20% of your time trying to come up with new stuff. New stuff is experimental. It's risky. It's just going to – I like to make the good things better. The whole point of optimization, especially with Facebook, is the algorithm gets more smart and there's more competition and the prices go up and all, you know, all this kind of stuff. That gives you a greater impetus or reason to focus on your winners and constantly try to tune them and make better versions of them and polish them up. Because I'd rather have one or two really good pieces of content over here than 50 things that are just crap because someone had to crank out a content calendar to check the box saying, yep, I made 50 pieces of content.
Gotcha. Yeah. Makes sense. and then when you just kind of in your 3x3, when you're setting it all up then, so it kind of helps people a little, is do you guys just run real broad or do you guys run – I know you mentioned lookalike earlier. Do you take it – do a lookalike and then run – you know, broad to that.
So we like to do a combination. At the bottom of the funnel, we like to start with 1% lookalike audiences. And then you can expand that to like a nested audience, like a 2% minus a 1 or a 5% minus a 2. You can try broader interest targets. We find that lookalikes tend to perform better if your seed audience, your custom audience that feeds in to create the lookalike is actually of high quality, 200 plus conversions. And each of these ad sets, you know, you want to see if you can 50 plus conversions the last 7 days. Most people create too many campaigns and too many ad sets, which puts too much pressure on the algorithm to try to figure out winners. So Facebook told us this when we were with them just a few weeks ago. They said, yeah, you know, if you don't know, don't guess, right? Don't try to do like the dumbest things. We see people like demographically narrow target because they'll say, oh, well, the only people that will use this skin cream product will be, you know, 40 to 55 year olds that are female. Well, you know what? There's going to be guys too. There's going to be younger women. So don't do demographic narrowing unless it's something like LDA, which is legal drinking age, and you're selling alcohol 21 plus in the United States, that kind of like legally. So let the algorithm do that. Have bigger buckets, have custom audiences feed this. At the top of your funnel, you want to be boosting posts and doing video view audiences and finding these videos that are getting 10 seconds plus average watch time. The average watch time on Facebook is 6 seconds. So if you get 10 seconds or 15 seconds, you're killing it. If you can get 50% of people who scroll down and see your stuff to stay and watch for 3 seconds, you're doing well. If you can get those people from 3 seconds to 10 seconds, 50%, you're doing well, right? The average is 1/3 to watch. The average is 1/3 to go from 3 seconds to 10 seconds. If you can go 50% to 50%, you're doing well. If you can get 10% engagement rate on your posts, meaning of the number of impressions, you get 10% of the people to like, comment, and share, you're doing well. If you can get negative feedback to be lower than 1% of your total engagement, you're doing well. Why? Because a negative feedback, when someone clicks hide or report spam or unlikes the page, that counts for a minus 100 in the algorithm. You need 100 likes to make up for one negative feedback, right? So these are things that you have to understand as you're putting stuff out there. My co-founder and business partner actually wrote a book on that. It's called The Standards of Excellence. And if you guys want to, I'll give it to you for 80% off. I think it's like $25 or something like that. I'll give it to you for 80% off if you use the code WeLoveJosh at blitzmetrics.com/SOE. Which is standards of excellence. And so when you put a bunch of content out there, you've got to figure out, is it working or not? How do you know? Is it the watch time? Is it the relevance score? Is it the CTR? Is it the cost per 10 second view? Is it the conversion rate, right? There's all these things you have to look at. And at any point in time, there's a certain – if you're a geek like me and I used to compete in math contests. I was number 5 in the nation in math counts. I actually traveled to compete in math contests. And I even went to math parties. You know what they do at math parties, Josh?
I don't. I was good at math, but I've never been to a math party.
They do math problems at math parties. Yeah.
I was figuring, but maybe there was some other math tweakiness going on.
that's what we do. And I found that to be kind of a gift, where most people, they don't like that sort of thing because they just would rather do like creative things or build relationships. I just sort of enjoy the math side of things. So we came up with these standards of excellence that we've taught young adults to be able to apply, where they have a large data set. They look at an ads account and they'll figure out what's working and what isn't working. The same way you bring your car to the dealer and the dealer can figure, you know, because the check engine light, the idiot light goes on, like, oh, bring the car to the dealer, right? And then the dealer can run the diagnostics to figure out what's going on. That's the way we view marketing. And so for us, Facebook is, on the optimization side, is a very mechanical, non-emotional, like very straightforward process. There's no voodoo. There's no need for like to bring in Dennis, because if Dennis touches it, then somehow it's going to be better, like because it's Dennis. Like, no, it's not. It's technique, dude. So it's kind of funny because everything prior to optimization, like the setting up the campaigns and figuring out who your ideal customer is and just, you know, figuring out the why, how, and what, the funnel, the 3x3, that's all right brain. That's all creative, right? But then the optimization side is all left brain. It's all, you know, like math and logic and rational and like, you know, this is like you have the artist and you have the like statistician. So you have to have both sides to be able to function. Most people have one side or the other side. So the thing is you can govern the structure of how you put your content out there like we talked about. And you can also mechanically optimize. Like I told you to, you know, things that suck, turn them off. Things that are doing well, put more money against it. Like you can, like in Facebook, they have something called automated rules. Are you using automated rules to do your account management for it? You know, your budget management and your bids and all that? You know, automated, like literally there's a section inside Business Manager called automated rules. That way you don't have to go in there and touch your ads every single day. You can say, hey, if something is driving sales for less than a $25 CPA, then put an extra $5 a day budget against it. Right? You can do that. If something's losing money or the frequency is greater than a 2 per week per ad set, then turn the budget down or turn it off or send me an alert when something happens, right? So we have the system. We have Facebook system automatically do that through tools that are built in that people don't even understand that you can use. And then we have our young adults come in as a layer on top of that, right?
Right. That's cool. No, that's awesome. I think those are some, you know, cool tips. You hear like all the other stuff. Oh, we got to go do this and this. And, you know, I mean, just like us personally, when you were mentioning, we have a good base of, that we start from for our LTV and all that. And, you know, and then we create a lookalikes from our audience. I don't know, over 20,000 purchases and all that kind of stuff. And, but then we actually then narrow saying, okay, we know our buyers are 25 to 44. Women. And so you're saying get rid of that part.
Don't do that. Yeah. Now most people misinterpret this. When you find a winner, let's say you have an ad set and it's driving conversions.
Sure.
And maybe you know in general your sweet spot is 25 to 44 female. Duplicate that ad set and have no targeting against it at all. And what you'll probably find is this one, maybe the CPA won't be quite as good, because it's a larger audience, but you'll get way more sales and you'll drive more gross margin against it. But it only works when you have something that's a performer, because then, because people say like, well, how come you're targeting, you know, everyone in the United States? I mean, there could be 13-year-olds that you're targeting. They're never going to buy, an unemployed, like, you know, or a grandpa who's like 90. Like, why would you target him? Yes. But when you set the business objective to website conversion and your pixel is already seasoned with the conversions, the system is going to sub-target within the bounded regions. So you want to set those bounded regions, if it's converting.
Right, if it's converting,
set
correct.
Those bounded regions as large as possible.
Okay, that makes
sense.
And
then the system, see, OCPM, optimized CPM, when you're choosing the objective, it's doing the sub-targeting and it's doing the bidding for you across different placements. It's redoing your creative to fit within Instagram stories if it's video and 15 seconds or less, all this kind of stuff, right? So I don't think people realize that Facebook is so powerful that if you can just feed in the right ingredients and you don't screw the machine up, it will work. Now, well, the hallmark of someone who's done Facebook ads for 2 years or less is like a rookie cop that wants to go out and like bust all the bad guys coming around the academy, is they want to turn the knobs, right? Some people, they feel like they have to come in and turn the knobs all the time. We don't believe in that. We believe put the stuff in there, have a simple campaign structure, not too many audiences, not too many, you know, ad sets, or because they just love to like multiply. Like, oh, there's like 500 campaigns in here. Dude, this is a mess. This is complexity, not sophistication, right? So don't mistake the two, right? The mark of being an expert is you can solve things very quickly and make them simple. When we come in and look at people's accounts, we always simplify them because people get in their own way because they want to turn the knobs. Or another thing is they want to change the bids every single day. Guess what happens when you do that? You reset the ad rank, and now it's got to that ad has to move its way back up in the auction again. When you have something that's working, let it run, right? Don't keep changing it every time, because then it's the same thing for Google. We did this with Rosetta Stone. We were spending over $1 million a day on AdWords and Facebook ads. And we were changing our creatives, and we were changing we were getting the most traffic on branded terms. So people type in Rosetta Stone because they want to learn Spanish, right? That's basically the main thing. And we changed the copy. We would just, and so the system never got a chance to build up ad rank. So by the, you know, we were doing this every single day. So what we did was we literally let the ads run by themselves, and then would move up. It would build up ad rank in the auction. And we found, and we've seen this with a bunch of accounts, that if we can just trim all the garbage, have a few big ad sets that are performing well, and then don't touch it. Don't touch. We'll get better performance and just let it run. It's literally, like, we have some accounts, I won't name them, but they're companies you've heard of, and their people do almost nothing. And they're driving more sales, and they produce the report saying, yeah, look, you know, we drove, you know, X millions of dollars per sales this month, and that they didn't do anything in the last month. And no one knows that, really, right? Because all the big bosses care about is the performance. So usually, if you got it set up right, I'm not saying never touch it or be afraid of like touching it. Obviously, go in and touch it if you like, but most people, they touch it too many times. It's like if you're planting seeds, you're trying to grow like tomatoes or something, and you plant seeds, and every day you dig up the plant and you check the roots, like the plant's never going to get a chance to grow.
Right. No, that's definitely interesting. And, you know, I think different than what a lot of people are doing out there, at least from that I've talked to. All right. So we're out of time now. but I want to thank you for, first of all, coming on. Guys, I hope you guys were taking notes when you're watching this or listening to this. Dennis shared some amazing insights, just from mentorship to gratitude and thank you. And then kind of at the end, we wrapped up with some really cool tactical thoughts and ideas and some just a whole different perspective on Facebook that's been, you know, crushing it out there for him and their clients and everything. So make sure you're taking notes. These are stuff that you can apply today, 30 days from now, you know, 6 months, a year out, and it's going to help you now and in the future. So start taking action and tactical steps today and tomorrow and that next day. And it's going to help you move your business and your personal life forward, you know, every minute of the next month, day, year, and week. So I want to really thank you for coming on the show. It was an amazing time having you here, and definitely want to have you back again, Dennis.
Thank you, Josh.
I am Josh Felber. You are watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to Making Bank. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And sharing is caring. Follow Josh Felber on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram for more. You can also listen to Making Bank on Amazon Alexa, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and watch on Apple TV, Success Thinkers Network, Amazon Fire, and YouTube.